Morning, good morning. Good to see everybody. Yay. I have a question. I don't know how long you hear the gong, because I cut it off sometimes at the very, very end, but it goes on and on and on. But you can hear that last subtle part. Fantastic. Wow. Good technology. So we're in the Torah portion of Ekev. And as always, I'm curious about what it can teach us about our practice. So in Ekev, we continue to receive Moshe's recap of the rules and laws in Deuteronomy, the second telling. Ekev can mean as a consequence. Oh, now I'm going to ask you another hearing question. Can you hear the power saw in the background? It's cutting down a humongous tree which has been ailing for a while, but it's very hard to listen to it being cut down limb by limb. Anyway, sorry about that, but I've been living with that for a couple of days, that electric saw on that beautiful mother tree. So Ekev can mean as a consequence, and the way that it's mostly interpreted is that as a consequence of obeying all these rules and laws, you will be blessed. And that's actually not so far off from the way we practice observing in our meditation practice. So when I was growing up, the word observe in the Torah meant do it, do the rules, do the commandments. Which I did not see anyone in my family doing, except for my first 10 years in the Bronx, going downstairs every Friday night to my grandparents' little tiny apartment with a huge table. That's about all there was there. For Shabbat, every Friday night with my cousins on the third floor, an aunt and uncle. And yeah, so that was holy. So I like the meaning of ekev that they say is as a consequence, but of having a regular, or at least a regular-ish, meditation practice. We stop, we observe, as in notice, the stories of the mind, the sensations of the body, the preferences and aversions of the heart. We watch the stories rise and fall. And we drop down underneath them for the direct experience of this moment of unfolding of being. We observe. Emotions are like this in the body, physical sensations like this. We experience this unfolding of life in a larger, kinder context of curiosity. We know now from years of watching, observing with some kindness and curiosity that these inner processes of being a vulnerable, time-limited human is not the whole story. As a consequence of this deepening awareness, it's safe for our hearts to break and also to expand our capacity for wonder. And for gratitude. We hear the mind's thoughts, the heart's yearnings, or the catastrophizing of what might happen. And it asks us, like the Torah does this week, to faithfully bring kind attention to the movements of the heart, the mind, the body, and the spirit. Knowing it may not lessen or remove a difficult feeling, but that it is possible to shift to observing the aversion, the yearning, as part of something much larger, a much larger interconnected reality. Moshe's repetition of God's message graciously meets our human need for repetition. In this eternal learning process, this awakening process, called Human Life 101, aka the one and only one, both as an individual life and in this place where there's only one thing happening, which is this divine unfolding. The Torah says, if you obey these rules of the one and only one, if you observe them carefully, your Havaya, your divine unfolding, will maintain a faithful covenant for you, or with you. This is the covenant that she promised to our ancestors. What would it be like if we knew in our kishkas that there was a kind of support for us, that kind of support for us in this life, that something faithfully loving is connecting with us all the time? What would life be like if we could observe the mitzvah, which in its one of its meanings is to connect, in Aramaic, to connect, to observe the mitzvah, to connect with that which is breathing us into being in this moment? If we could only turn toward this moment and open to its care, could we do that no matter what's going on? Can we move into gentle intimacy with this moment right now? Rashi points out that the shoresh of the root ekev also means heel, heel as in the bottom of your foot. Same root as Jacob's name, because he grabbed the heel of his twin brother, who was entering the world moments before Jacob emerged. We know that Jacob has to grow beyond this defining moment of his life. But first, he will encounter additional intense constriction from duping his brother Esau out of his birthright, and still further tightening when he has to run for his life. This small self state of desperation is familiar. We want, we need, we yearn, we try to grab what we desperately want and push away what terrifies us. But in the very midst of the desperate grasping or the giving up is the possibility of observing, watching closely, what arises within and around you. So this practice is the alternative to either grasping or giving up. It urges and enables us to return to each new breath, in which Havaya breathes us back into this life for one more moment. It asks us that we bring some kindness to our desperation of wanting and not wanting, our judgments and our doubts, our catastrophizing and our regrets. Our end of the deal of this covenant of the faithful requires that we turn toward the unfolding of being. In endless myriad moments, we reconnect over and over, like right now. Knowing, breathing in. Knowing, breathing out. We allow awareness to permeate raw emotion, despair, hope, disappointment, love, judgment, joy, and doubt. And in this way, the Jacob within us has to wake up and become Yisrael. The translation of Yisrael is one who struggles with the divine unfolding of reality, or goes yeshar, straight into connection with this aliveness. In order to become Yisrael, Jacob and we have to accept our shortcomings, our blindnesses, our frailties, the parts of ourselves that we're ashamed of or afraid of, in order to become Yisrael, one who struggles with God. or the God wrestler. Jacob has to forgive himself and forgive others and embrace his wounds and how he has wounded others. And then for a last making sure that he gets the message, the angel gives him a twist so that his hip is wounded and that he will forever walk with a limp, so that his frailty, his imperfections, the very things that we want to hide now become visible. I notice how much I want to reassure others with my diagnosis of MCI, the mild cognitive impairment. Like, please don't worry about me. I'm still okay. And I think that maybe like Jacob before his hip was twisted, that somehow the marching orders from very early in life for me was to be the one who was okay. And there's fear of the inevitability of my shortcomings showing, and maybe even my not knowing how my shortcomings are going to be showing. Shortcomings that we all experience one way or another if we're lucky enough to age. My friend Roberta Wall, who spent time with me in Plum Village with Thich Nhat Hanh, writes a blog called Torah at the Intersection, and she interprets each week's parasha from the lens of nonviolent communication and Buddhism. And she calls the Promised Land a field of promise and translates a passage from Ekev like this. And if you will listen and hear these laws and observe them carefully, then, and here this is her name for God in this moment, and then eternally present creativity will maintain faithfully for you the promise of your ancestors. The word ekev can be translated if you follow. And Roberta writes that this is the reminder that there are consequences of an action inherent in that action. She writes, eternally present isn't conditional. This is a statement of the law of phenomenon. Cause and effect inter are. That's one of the verbs that Thich Nhat Hanh invented in English. Action and effect are not separate. So Moses instructs, she says, how we in human form can enter and inhabit connection and presence fully by attending to both our intention and the impact of our actions. So ekev, consequences, are about how life flows through our listening and our doing. There is no separation between cause and effect. She points out that the word Shema occurs 92 times in Devarim. Wow. And she interprets it this way. Listen to understand your actions matter. And from Torah at the Intersection, Ekev, again we hear, do not worship false gods. I think these false gods are in part the stories we tell about this life, about ourselves, about you and about me. And the impact of these teachings of Ekev, I think, make it necessary to enter that field of promise, or maybe even the field of forgiveness. Because we fail at the Torah's demands all the time. And I think I once heard, I don't know if it was Alan Liu, but saying that this practice is a practice of learning to fail graciously. We believe the stories about this world, maybe even about the stories that newspapers and our ways of learning about the world present, what they present, what they leave out. And these stories can weigh us down, and that we can also dump the stories on each other. But the moments that we sit in silence and hold our stories in kindness, is the moment that we are connecting to the eternal presence that is, among other things, inherently forgiving. That's hard to internalize, but I think it's a deep part of our practice. According to this week's parasha, when you walk by the way, in Hebrew halacha, the path, and observe each moment closely, shamor, 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 watch, guard, pay attention, then you spread blessing. And certainly, that is what's remarkable in this experience that we have together in our little sangha, in our kahal. Each one of us becomes a blessing to each other. And together we bring blessing into the world in a way that we could not do without each other. We offer up these blessings as our human limits, struggles, our vulnerabilities, our abandonment, and our love. These rules and laws of Torah in Moshe's retelling offer continual opportunities for awakening and for entering into connection with a divine flow. These weeks of the Jewish calendar now are times of thick challenge to practice teshuvah, turning, returning, being turned, which I think is another great description of our practice. At the heart of teshuvah is forgiveness for self, for others. Can we widen the lens of our observation of Shamor to watch our own unending oceanic movements of turning away and returning? A mood arises, a mood dissipates. The breath comes in and we feel it go out. Can we notice how the mind settles and how the mind flees into story? Can we notice colossal effort and the resting in ease? To live the challenges of these weeks in the Jewish cycle of holiday, Rabbi Alan Liu urges that, quote, we have to find a way from unconsciousness to consciousness. We have to become aware of our moral and spiritual condition. We do not operate in a spiritual vacuum. There is, in fact, a transcendent consciousness out there watching us with unbearable compassion as we blunder through the world. Can we see ourselves through the eyes of a consciousness beyond us? Let's sit for a moment before we have our conversation. Okay. Should I ring the bell one more time? These are being recorded for posterity. So here's our bell.